As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne, the Athletics Newcastle United podcast. My name's Taylor Payne and I'm joined by George Colgan. Hello, George.
Newcastle United. Just think I should keep with the theme from the last...
Let's not do that.
No, I'm going to try to keep animal references, accidental animal references to a minimum. How are you?
I'm not bad. I'm not bad at all. Are you okay? Are you good?
Well, I'm... living Groundhog Day that is Newcastle United.
Absolutely.
Away from home.
It just keeps going, doesn't it? Chris Woff's here as well. Chris, you all right?
I'm a bit sleep deprived. And when George mentions Groundhog Day, I very much had that at Stamford Bridge. Only this time I made even more of a tit of myself than I usually do. So the same thing happens, which is I get there and the best part, basically, and this is a very journalistic and very selfish thing, but the best part about going to Stamford Bridge is that basically the fare is wonderful. So you get in there and there's like a buffet out, and I'd absolutely gorge on that, did what I always do. And the issue was during the game, not only were Newcastle not very good, but I just want to have a sleep. So there's that issue. But anyway, the game happens, same thing as always happens. Getting to the press conference, you're miles away from the managers. Actually, for once, Eddie Howe didn't seem absolutely furious with my questions. So I thought, this is going to be a good night. But one of my ex-flatmates from when I lived in London was at the game covering it for somebody else. And so after the press conference, as I went to leave, those people sat on the laptops facing the side of the wall. So I went across and I hugged someone, put my arms around and hugged
him. Oh, no.
To which... then my ex-flatmate walked past behind, and I thought, okay. And so this other guy sort of turns around and looks at me, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were Kieran, I thought you were my ex-flatmate. Kieran's like, what the hell's going on? And this guy, not only had I made, was it really awkward, this guy made it even more awkward because he clearly just wasn't having any of it. So he just turned around and went, I've never seen you before in my life. And it was just so incredibly awkward. Everybody else in the press room turned around and just like this man who's just going up and randomly hugging strangers. So I may be banned from Stamford Bridge.
Good heavens, Christopher.
You can't get away with that kind of thing anymore, Chris. Trust me, I know. Oh dear, that is awful. That was a bad night all round in that case, wasn't it?
You made an absolute twat of yourself there, Chris, and not for the first time, and what I'm sure won't be the last
time either. Well, at least I'm consistent, like Newcastle United, unfortunately. Consistently inconsistent.
Consistently a twat. Excellent. That's what we want, isn't it?
Still don't.
Right then. The sky's falling down again, chaps, isn't it? Everything's gone to shit. The world is ending. The universe has imploded. Newcastle United lost 3-2 to Chelsea on a quite poor night at Stamford Bridge. It was bad, no doubt about that. But how bad was it really, George?
My problem isn't the badness of it, but I will happily accept that it was bad. A scale of bad? I mean, what is the scale of bad?
We've got quite
a frame of reference
for that, haven't we? Let's be honest.
Well, we've got a long, beautiful history of badness, shitness. My problem with it, though, wasn't that. My problem with it was the familiarity of it. Mm. So the badness of it is something that we've seen so many times before this season. My problem is that now no team in the Premier League has conceded more goals away from home than Newcastle this season. They're level with Sheffield United on 32 goals. That's appalling. My problem is that they've now conceded 3 goals or more in 8 of their last 14 Premier League matches. And it's the same thing week after week after week. Thought we'd sort of seen the last of it, or thought perhaps there might have been a different way of doing things with the Wolves game. But away from home, it's just this softness, and it's the same mistakes in the same areas of the pitch. You know, Newcastle scored twice at Stamford Bridge, which they've not done for quite a long time. It was utterly meaningless, though, because the way they conceded goals meant there was never, ever a chance of getting anything from it. And again, the frustrating thing for me is that they were up against a really mediocre Chelsea team who, in lots of ways, were there for the taking. And Newcastle absolutely handed Chelsea that win.
Very leaky, Chris, Newcastle at the minute, aren't they? They're doing their best impression of a colander or a sieve or maybe some Swiss cheese or something else with holes in it. They are very leaky. And all three of those goals looked entirely avoidable to me.
They did. I mean, I'll be honest, for 5.5 minutes, I thought Newcastle were very good. I thought that they pressed high. They really frustrated Chelsea. And you could see what the game plan was going to be. And then it was my main frustration from the game beyond. I know what George means about the familiarity. And I've been at Stamford Bridge and seen that same game over and over again. People were asking me before going down there, oh, how are you feeling ahead of the match? And I mean, we know I'm terrible at predictions anyway. But if you actually looked at it on relative form, Newcastle should have been fairly confident going in that one, certainly with Chelsea's general form. But it's just Stamford Bridge just is not a place Newcastle tends to play well at. And I didn't even think Chelsea were any good. I mean, Newcastle basically handed them 3 goals. And certainly, the first one, how we use the term, that they killed themselves. And they did. I mean, they were all self-inflicted, to use that term. It very much was. The first goal is Newcastle have the same problem they've had so many times in recent weeks, which is Dan Byrne having got extra cover against Wolves, the people in front of him. Newcastle, basically, the way that Eddie Howe approached it, had removed that to a certain degree. Whether it was because Gordon had picked up an injury or not by that stage, we'll get onto that in a bit. But he has no cover. Gusto gets beyond him, puts a ball in the box. There's a complete mix-up or between Dubravka and Sven Botman, or Dubravka doesn't call, and so Botman feels he has to clear the ball. Clears it very poorly, straight to Palmer. But even then, nobody really closes Palmer down. No. He gets a shot away, and then Jackson with a sort of clever flick, if you think it was deliberate. I'm still not convinced it was deliberate, but everyone else seems to think it was. So yeah, great flick from him. And Dubravka, should he do better? Possibly. But it's just that immediately giving themselves a very difficult start and having to get back into a match when actually they'd pressed high and caused Chelsea a lot of problems, but then they just hand a side who are struggling for confidence a goal in front of their home fans, and that really spurred them all on.
Yeah, it was really hard to watch that first goal. It felt like the ball just kind of dribbled in, and you look at that defence and you look at the goalkeeper and you think, surely somebody can do more there to stop that ball going in the net, George. It didn't need to happen.
It's every part of the team, and it's every part of the defence. I mean, there's, you know, that's the thing. It's, you know, I think if you ask a manager to analyse a goal that their team's conceded, they'll always pinpoint mistakes, because that's how goals are scored. But it's one mistake, then another mistake. And as I said before, it's also the same frailties that we're seeing week in, week out. And they just haven't been addressed. You know, you look for your team to work in units, whether it's the left side of the team, whether it's the centre-halves, whether it's centre-half and full-back, blah, 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 all across the pitch. Newcastle are playing as a team of individuals. There isn't protection for any part of the team. So, again, you know, Dan Byrne is presented with a pacey winger. He is not given protection by Anthony Gordon. One thing that Chris noticed in the first half was that Tindall and Eddie Howe were kind of berating Gordon to get out there and do that, because that's what you need. If you haven't got a pacey fullback, we've seen this time and time again with Newcastle.
You need help.
You have to help. Burns' qualities are in different areas or in different parts of his game. It's not if he's up against a pacey winger, chances are he's going to be in trouble. So there has to be a way of compensating for that, and they just weren't doing it. And the annoyance with that is, as I said before, is we've just seen that so many times. And we thought against Wolves that there might have been a way of combating that. We'll maybe talk about that at greater length in a bit, but I was at Stamford Bridge to see the Cup game,
yeah,
which obviously Newcastle didn't get through, but for a lot of that game they had control. And part of the way they played was to allow Chelsea to have the ball and know that they were playing a team that didn't have any fluency, that didn't have any confidence, and effectively Newcastle let Chelsea play themselves out and caught them on the break. That was a style of playing. I was really surprised that they didn't do the same thing.
Yeah, I didn't think it would set up the way they did. I thought it was
no.
Yeah, I thought it was strange. That was a bizarre setup.
No, and again, that's something we should look at. We should look at in sort of greater, you know, greater depth. But what do you want from your team? Well, obviously you want to play in a certain way. Of course you do. You want to have an identity. You want everyone to know what they're doing. But if things aren't going your way, whether it's during the course of a match or whether it's with things like injury and fitness concerns, you have to find a way to both maximise your own strengths and minimise your weaknesses. And I think Wolves was a great example of that. Newcastle absolutely managing to do that. Chelsea was the opposite. And like I said before, we've just seen it so many times this season that Newcastle, what they're doing is they're doing the opposite. They're emphasising their own weaknesses. And it means they cannot win a game because they're gifting goals to the opposition.
Chris, would you say that a backup keeper is now somebody who's going to be on a wanted list for Newcastle in the summer?
Well, I think there's at least some frustration among fans, and I think even sort of maybe he's within the club, or at least a disappointment with the performances. It's not just Martin Dubravka's fault that Newcastle have been conceding goals recently, but equally, I also don't think that he certainly doesn't offer the same reassurance to the defence as Nick Pope does. Maybe he doesn't save the same volume of shots, or certainly big shots that you feel whenever Pope plays, you feel there's big one save, big yeah. moment which will inspire yeah, the exactly. rest of the team. Yeah, and it sort of lifts everyone. It looked like the defence and Dubravka were starting to build a bit more of a rapport, but for whatever reason, that wasn't there last night. And I thought that, again, that sort of maybe Dubravka not sure what the defence are going to do. Are they going to drop deep? Are they going to go high? They went ridiculously high when they conceded the second goal in the second half. The high line was frighteningly high given the frailties Newcastle have shown.
Yeah.
But then Dubravka, you're not sure if he's going to come or go. His positioning for a couple of the goals, in terms of where he was in his line, wasn't particularly convincing, and he got criticised. Jamie Carragher did it on TV. I wasn't actually watching that. Obviously, I was there, but I've seen the quote, and I'll be honest, I thought the same sort of thing. But that's...
There was the one where Sterling went through as well and went round him, and it was only stopped from being a goal by Dan Burn on the line, and he kind of flapped a bit at that one as well.
Yeah, and this is not to dig out Dubravka. Newcastle did not lose last night solely because of Martin Dubravka.
There were so many
poor performances, but the volume of goals Newcastle have conceded since he's come into the side, again, that's not just down to him, but it is structurally the way the style of play he plays with. So you ask, are they going to want a backup goalkeeper in the summer? I think that it's likely that we'll be looking for a goalkeeper. Now, what will be interesting in that sense is that I know part of Newcastle's idea in terms of recruitment is that you bring in a player who is of the equivalence, if not better, than the players in your current first 11, and therefore the quality of your squad grows because of that. Because if someone comes in and knocks a current player out of the first 11, then your squad itself is growing and is improving because of that. So is that someone they think could be a successor to Nick Pope? Is it someone who's an equivalent of Nick Pope? Do they have the sort of Arsenal situation where is it going to be Ramsdale or Raya, and then Raya becomes the keeper? Are they going to do something like that? They have been heavily linked with Aaron Ramsdale. There's obviously Bournemouth links there in terms of Eddie Howe, I haven't seen it previously. I'll be honest, I don't know if that one is true or not. I don't know at this stage, we're a little bit too far out for that, but I do think that is an area. I think that Martin Dubravka hasn't convinced enough people inside the club that he is the long-term option, that I'd be surprised if Newcastle don't look for another goalkeeper this summer.
We shouldn't forget that we're not too far away from that really good performance at Blackburn Rovers in the FA Cup when Dubravka also saved penalties. That felt like a really big moment, and he got that lovely ovation from the away fans at Ewood Park. And Chris is right, it's not just about Dubravka. If you look at the big picture stuff, though, and this is from a graphic that Sky showed last night, I mentioned conceding 3+ goals. Newcastle with Pope, this season were second in the league. They've gone to 20th with Dubravka clean sheets.
Wow.
They've gone from top of the league to 15th. Goals conceded, they've gone from second in the league to 19th. Now, if you're looking for a bit of context and a bit of perspective and to switch that around a bit, there is a very important qualification. If you look at the number of shots that Newcastle goalkeepers are facing this season, with Nick Pope in goal, they were fourth, and now with Dubravka in goal, they're 15th. Now, that does tell quite an important story of the lack of protection or the suspect protection in front of the keeper. Now, if you put those two things together, the hesitancy that Chris talked about, that Dubravka is perhaps showing, not sweeping up, that's another good stat. With Pope in goal, Newcastle were third in the league in terms of sweeping, in terms of their keeper sweeping up. They've gone down to 17th. No. That gives a great example of how their style of play has had to change at the back. So if you put that uncertainty, and then put that uncertainty that Dubravka himself is facing, and this is exactly the point I was trying to make about partnerships. You know, it's not just a back four, you're talking about a back five. And the people that have the keeper behind them aren't feeling secure. Dubravka's not feeling secure. The midfield is not feeling secure that the defence is going to keep them in the game. And so it's all just adding up.
Just shows you how important a good goalkeeper is, doesn't it? The knock-on effect through the team, for it to have such a sweeping effect on every single department of the team, just because your goalkeeper's different, it's unbelievable. That.
Yeah, I think it's made a big difference. It certainly is not all Dubravka's fault. There is a far bigger systemic issue going on with the way Newcastle have been set up. And again, you know, we'll come on to talk about this next, but that you have to, if things aren't working, you have to find a way of coping with that and dealing with it and compensating as best you can. And they certainly didn't do that at Chelsea.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
I'd eat orchid.
So, Chris, George mentioned before the system and the approach from Newcastle. Did Eddie Howe set them up wrong? The deeper blocks, they worked against Wolves last week, and to some degree, like George mentioned before, at Stamford Bridge and the Carabao. What was the difference last night? Why did they seem a bit more gung-ho?
Actually, as I said, for the first 5.5 minutes, I could see what Newcastle were trying to do, and it really did put Chelsea under pressure, and Newcastle's press was back in a sort of ferocious way that it sort of was only very intermittent against Wolves, and actually Newcastle sat deep. It's hard to prove whether that would have worked if Newcastle hadn't shot themselves in the foot and conceded a goal, but I can see why he did approach it in that way, because I do think that Chelsea were susceptible. I think if Newcastle had scored early on, the feeling inside the ground and speaking to people who were involved in Chelsea and all the fans there, I think it was an atmosphere which could have turned. And so if Newcastle could have gone ahead and sort of put the pressure on Chelsea, then I think that they could have potentially had some success from that. But the reality is that isn't what happened. And then Newcastle looked so open and gifted Chelsea 3 goals, but also the same issues were back that George mentioned earlier, where the Newcastle's left-hand side is targeted and there's not the cover. And through the midfield, they're just cut open. And as I said before, the high line in the second half was sort of frightening. It was weird that as soon as Newcastle went two on behind, it was they were really, really high up the field.
Yeah.
And then Chelsea got through in a couple of breaks, as you mentioned, the Sterling chance. So I can see why Howe did it, but the reality is it didn't work. And because changing it had worked so well the previous week and had been a contrast to what fans had seen and been disappointed with, I think that it's hard for him to argue that it was the right strategy, because in the end they lost. I do think that also his comments after the game, when he sort of talked about the fact that he thought they'd played well, I thought for the first time under Eddie Howe that he made comments which, in my opinion, he would probably disagree with, in my opinion, belied what he maybe actually thought.
Yes, about those comments, Eddie Howe, is he kind of overdoing his defence of the players and the team? Here's what he said to the press.
The three goals that I conceded today, I think, were as poor as we have conceded for a while. And you can't come away from home and play well, because we did, and concede those goals and expect to get anything from the game. And, you know, that really has cost us the match. No, I don't think there's anything wrong with our method today. I mean, you could see that I thought there was a lot of good in the performance. I thought we played some really good football at times, got into really good crossing areas, showed attacking intent, showed bravery. There was a lot of good, and that can't be lost. It was a strange game, because it was a game of few chances, but there's ended up being five goals. So confusing, really, in the fact that we were inconsistent even within today's performance. We've been inconsistent within this run of games that we've had lately, but this was an inconsistent performance, because a lot of good, some bad, and we've ended up losing the game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he said inconsistent, and he's also said confusing. I mean, I've felt confused for about 30 years now, but yeah. I am confused about Newcastle this season. I honestly don't know how to feel about the team. I mean, I don't know how to feel about whether the season's been a bad season or a good season or bits of both. Very difficult to sort of frame what the team's identity is, apart from that sort of, you know, the injuries and hit and miss and, you know, that sort of roller coaster element to it. I agree with what he said about the defending of the team, but I think, you know, if you're trying to weigh up good and bad, then it's a 5-2 defeat. It's not a 3-2 defeat. I mean, that in my opinion, because I just think the way they defended and the way they conceded goals was so bad and so familiar that it completely outweighs the quote unquote good stuff. If you're looking at the good stuff, obviously two brilliant goals, but sort of individual goals. And as Chris said, they did start very well. And I'll chip in briefly on that sort of system. The thinking must have been that, all right, in their last home game, Chelsea had been booed off by their own fans. In their last away game, their supporters were singing the names of Mourinho and singing the names of Roman Abramovich. They're bang under pressure. They're mid-table, just like we are, just like Newcastle are. They've spent a shitload of money and things haven't worked for them. And the thinking absolutely must have been to get at them, put them under pressure. If you can get the crowd to turn early on, then you know, that's the way to approach it.
Yeah.
In retrospect, I just don't think that was the right approach. I think Newcastle have found a way of playing, as I said before, found a way of playing that disguised their frailties. Now, you know, if they'd got that early goal, perhaps it would have mitigated against that. I don't know, but it's just that when Newcastle make mistakes, they make mistakes so badly and so obviously. There are those holes all over the pitch. And, you know, the other way of playing it was to be a little bit more patient, give the ball to Chelsea, let them do nothing with it, don't give them much space, press them at various points, you know, when Wolves were playing out, press them at that point, you know, do that kind of thing. Put them on. They didn't like that, Chelsea, when Newcastle were doing that to them. It forced them in the end to go long. That was one thing that sort of I noticed. But no, I mean, I can't kind of look at that game and think that there was a lot of good and some bad in that. It was the other way around. There was, you know, it's so bad and so familiar that just completely and utterly outweighs anything else.
And of course, the injury nightmare continues as well, Chris, doesn't it? Anthony Gordon going off. It looked pretty nasty, that. Especially when that physio came on and tried to flex his knee for him. He nearly jumped out the stadium, didn't he, bless him?
Yes, that wasn't a great look on camera, was it, to see that? But he It was a weird one, and Howe himself said that there wasn't a specific moment where Gordon actually felt his knee go. I don't know how early in the match it actually was, and as we've said, Byrne wasn't getting the cover that you would expect that he should have done, and that would partly have been because Gordon physically couldn't run as much. I mean, why he didn't bring himself off sooner if he really couldn't run, I'm not entirely sure, because Howe and Tindall were remonstrating with him, and they were getting very frustrated that he wasn't covering back on Byrne. A physio was actually sent round onto the other side of the pitch to sort of basically find out what the issue was, and then eventually Gordon and Almiron were switched over, and then Gordon got fouled, but I don't think that was the reason why his knee injury was an issue. Where he's that flared it up further, I don't know. I mean, at this stage, Howe was saying that Newcastle didn't know the extent of it, but they were fearful that it could be bad. We haven't got concrete information on that yet, so as we record at 7:04 on Tuesday evening, we're not entirely sure what the situation is, but I mean, he's certainly going to be a significant doubt for Man City on Saturday, and that in itself is a big enough blow, given that Harvey Barnes looks set to miss that as well with a bit of a hamstring injury, which meant that he wasn't on the bench last night.
Yeah, Gareth Southgate was in the crowd as well, George. He's probably decided to pick Cole Palmer, I would imagine. But Tino Livramento, he might be knocking on the door any day now, mightn't he? He put in a decent performance.
Yeah, I mean, just on Gordon, it's a real shame for him on a personal level. He has had an outstanding season for Newcastle. He's been a rare source of consistency, of performance, really good, you know, a large number of goals, 10 goals this season, 5 assists, I think it is. And, it's been a source of a bit of confusion about why he's not been called up, albeit England, you know, do have strength at the moment. So a real shame for him that he just wasn't able to showcase his talent in front of Southgate. But, you know, what a player Tino Livramento already is and is going to be. I think if there was criticism of many of his teammates last night, I think he is excused from that. I do think he was very, very good. Newcastle did miss Trippier's set piece delivery, I think, but Livramento just looks like a class act, and
Chelsea spent the game fouling him as well to basically try and stop him from getting beyond.
A lad got kicked all over, didn't he?
Yeah, I was going to make that point. He was certainly targeted with some pretty rough treatment, but responded really well. He's a class act.
He really is. It could have been an awful lot worse without those two very impressive goals. Alexander Isak showing his class again. And Jacob Murphy with a pointless worldie as well. nice to see them again, isn't it? It's occasionally you'll get a pointless worldie. Danny Guthrie was always good for a pointless worldie. Right wingers, they've had a bit of a positive impact from the bench, Chris, but neither have really grasped the chance starting games, have they?
No, I mean, just briefly on both goals. I mean, Newcastle have scored some very, very good goals at Stamford Bridge over the years, including in some heavy defeats. There was Andros Townsend's screamer again in a heavy defeat. Obviously, Papis Cisse's two goals in the one victory Newcastle have ever had at Stamford Bridge in the Premier League era in the league. But the first goal was a really, really well-worked goal. Newcastle, it actually showed Newcastle pressing high, and it showed what Newcastle could do when they won the ball high. Bruno Guimaraes wins it, does his sort of like futsal little flick to the left.
Very clever.
Plays a really, really clever little dinked through ball to set up Isak, and then Isak, just so cool, cuts in on his right and sort of whips it round De Sassi in the bottom corner. Very, very good goal. Newcastle's only shot on target in the first half. The other one is Miley does very well, feeds Murphy, who gives Kukurea the sort of shoulder, and then it is an absolute thunder bastard of another shot. There's just beyond the goalkeeper before he can get to it. Yeah. So both goals were very, very good, but as you say, by Murphy's, the stage of Murphy's, Newcastle were 3-1 down, it became 3-2. Howe had already taken off Bruno Guimaraes, which felt like he was basically accepting they weren't going to get back into the game. But in terms of the right wingers, yes, Almiron made an impact last weekend against Wolves. Murphy, I thought, made a bit of an impact when he came on. This time, obviously, Almiron shifted to the left. I thought he looked all right at points on the left as well. Yeah. Murphy I saw a lot of people getting frustrated by his delivery. I actually thought he put in a couple of really good crosses. He put in some terrible crosses as well. But this is the problem that Newcastle have, is that a lot of their players aren't being pushed enough to be able to be dropped and then brought back into the team. They sort of come out for a game or two, then they're coming back in. But this is what you want, that sort of competition, and that will drive them on to different levels. And really, I think the right wing is a position that a lot of fans, understandably, and I believe those inside the club, thinks needs to be upgraded this summer.
Yeah, is there a sense, George, that the team and the squad has kind of arrived at the end of a phase? We've already said that an overhaul is due. But is there a chance it could be quite radical this time round?
Yeah, I mean, I think this was already a huge summer, as you say. It feels likely that with the spending restrictions that Newcastle and other Premier League teams have had, that that they're going to have to generate income. So that's, you know, that's kind of obvious. So that means they have to make big decisions on who might go and what that then means to the formation of the team and who then comes in. I think it's a sort of easy thing to say after a series of matches like this, that this is a team that's lost its energy, that's lost its way. I think, you know, the thing that we do have to accept that when we're, you know, when we are talking about this season, it's very difficult to draw conclusions from that kind of stuff, because just made that point about Gordon, one of the rare players who's not had a shitload of fitness problems this season, but has played absolutely every game and has been, you know, it's been that feeling of him being flogged. And injury in those circumstances becomes far more likely. You know, the same thing when you're talking about Barnes coming back from a long-term injury is then far more susceptible to injury. It's the same all over the pitch. Talking about Almiron and Murphy, players, you know, you want to be coming onto the pitch angry and forcible and needing to prove a point. None of that's happening. So all the players who are playing know that they're going to play and just haven't had those replacements there. They, if they're not physically tired, they look mentally tired. So it's very difficult to draw sort of massive conclusions, I would say. But I do think that, you know, I think there was an argument to be made saying that with the way that Eddie Howe wants to play, that it does have that aggression, it does have that intensity. There are parallels with Liverpool when Klopp was there. Does a team run out of steam and need to be renewed just because that way of playing takes so much out of you?
Yeah.
It's a good question. I think those decisions have to be made in a fairly cold manner. And now is maybe not the time to do it. It was always going to be a big summer, though. And, nothing that's happened suggests it's going to be anything else.
Right, then we'll have a little move on in a second. But I will say, before we go any further, Chris Woff bloody loves describing goals, doesn't he? He bloody loves it. His little face lights up. His eyes get all wide. He gets a little cheeky grin on his face. And he describes goals really, with so much vigour.
It's beautiful. He's the diligent one. He's the sort of detail man. But we do need that because, I mean, I can't remember anything that's ever happened. So all games are the same.
The Chris Woff describing goals podcast coming soon.
I did Chelsea's first goal, but I'm gonna save listeners from having to listen to the other two Chelsea goals because it was crap defending, essentially, is the long and short of it.
Let's not relive that. Full FA Cup preview coming up on Friday, but we'll worry about crossing that particular bridge when we've got Stamford out of our systems. Let's have a little break and we'll be back in a moment.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Come on, you Maggies.
Right then, on to the lasses, and if you want consistency, George Colkin, which you're always going on about, this is the team for you, isn't it? Another trip to the very southern part of Northern England, just outside Birmingham, and another 3 points for the lasses.
Is Birmingham Northern England?
The top part of it practically is. It's right in the middle, isn't it?
This comes on to Chris and his definition of geography, doesn't it? Well done, Chris, by the way, for going south of the River Tyne. This is always a big moment for you. We know you don't like it. We know it makes you feel a bit funny in your stomach. So well done.
Chris, it's literally called the FA Northern Premier Division as well.
Yeah, but it's like the Newcastle's under-21s in the Checkatrade Trophy or whatever it is, that now, the Pizza Trophy, whatever it is, because then you basically, there are so many teams in the South compared to in the quote-unquote North that they're just bundling teams from Wales or wherever.
So, like, one thing that we were reminded of this week is that Chris actually lived in Fulham for a while, and it's like the most incongruous thing that you could ever imagine. What did you do with your whippet, Chris, when you were living in Fulham?
Did you have a space for your pit pony to park in?
Or where did you keep your meat? And how did you manage with an inside toilet?
I used to demand ham and peas pudding was brought to me from the northeast.
That's when you came back, wasn't it? When you found out the Greggs don't do meat pies. What is it that they don't do down south that they do up here?
Stotties.
They don't do stotties, yeah. Okay, well, disgusting. Did you enjoy living in London?
No.
Okay. Right, so we were talking about the Lasses team. Yeah, they're just incredible. They're it's a well-oiled machine. The really impressive thing so far this month is that they're playing away games and they're still winning. They're on a kind of Midlands, South Northern England roll at the minute. So they've beaten Stoke, they've beaten Stourbridge. They're playing Wolves next, though, away from home. And of course, they've got the cup final. They only play one home game this month, and that's against Liverpool right at the end of the month. But you just don't have any fear about them, do you? Because they're just rolling on. It's the power of positive momentum. Yeah, absolutely. 12 points clear at the top now. Just fantastic.
Two goals as well from the prolific Georgia Gibson, and one from a more slightly rarefied source as well, Emma Kelly. I think she even surprised herself with a terrific little strike. Cup final in a fortnight, George, as you say, of course, but it's the third leg of the Lasses' residency in the Midlands. They had the Wolves next Sunday. Based on the producer's amateurish calculations, they need 10 points from the last five games to guarantee the FAWNL Premier North title. Burnley could only manage a draw last weekend. It's all getting a bit spicy up there, George, isn't it? It's close.
No, it's not, Taylor. It's the absolute opposite of that.
It is. I know. I'll do that again. Yeah, it's looking good up there, George, isn't it? Shut up.
I mean, the one thing, Taylor, you wouldn't say it was would close. I mean, only an idiot would say that things are getting...
What I meant when I said close was I meant promotions close.
Okay. Promotion close.
You fucking, honestly, can't say a note on this podcast, can you? Hang on. Let's do this again. Let's get it right. Stop sniggering. Straighten your face. There we go. Right.
Getting a bit spicy.
It's all getting a bit spicy up there, George. Promotion is close.
That's certainly right. I mean, because you certainly wouldn't want to say it was close at the top of the division simply because...
No, nobody
would say that, Taylor, would they?
Only a twat would say that, George.
Yeah, because it's the opposite. They're miles ahead. Promotion is close. I've got no idea if Ollie's maths are right there, but I'll just trust him. I don't know why, because nothing he's ever done before has suggested he's earned that trust. But yeah, sorry, Ollie.
Fair enough. Thanks to David Patrick as well, who emailed in. Is it not the case that the league winners need to win a playoff against the South League winners? Looking online, including the FA's website, it seems to suggest so. Although that's not been updated for years. But good news, David. We've had a look into this. The rules were changed this season, so the winners of both Northern and Southern Premier Divisions will be promoted to the Championship. We have that on good authority, as it was reported by Ali Ramblin on The Athletic back in April 2023. Chris has his finger in the air, which can only mean one thing.
I just thought we should also mention that the Lionesses are going to play at St James's Park for the first time as well ever this May 31st, when they host France as well. So another huge women's match, which is going to be held at St James's Park. So that's great news.
Well, Chris, you hate international football. Do you hate women's international football?
I do not
as well,
hate
Chris?
Women's international football, no.
Oh, that's an interesting turn of events.
Why?
I wasn't expecting that.
Good question.
You have absolutely no
everything
answer.
Everything I say, you could just reply with why too. So yeah.
Very, very true. I gave a plug to the Tyneside show that I'm going to this week. So that's tomorrow. That's Wednesday. I've actually seen the film in advance, Copper 71. When it's out, I would really urge people who love sports documentaries, football documentaries, about the unofficial 1971 World Cup, which was held in Mexico. It's an absolutely brilliant film. Very emotional. Really good, very funny in places, very inspiring. And if you don't watch it and feel a burning sense of anger afterwards, I'd be very surprised. But a brilliant film. But on that subject, yeah, if you get a chance to watch Copper 71, it's on at the Tyneside Cinema, but at other good film emporiums too.
Definitely check that out.
Film emporiums.
I was about to say available at all good bookshops, but that doesn't
Young
work.
Boy, do you know where the local film emporium is?
Film emporium. Emporium is a shop, isn't it? So that doesn't... What are film palaces? I don't know. What would they be? Movie palaces.
The picture house.
Movie theatres. Movie theatres.
Movie theatres.
Oh, yes. George is off to the talkies tomorrow night. Finally, George, did you see Thomas Nelson on Mastermind last night? His specialist subject, apparently, was Sir Bobby Robson.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
He hates quizzes. We know he hates quizzes.
Cannot stand quizzes.
No, I heard about that. I heard about that, but yeah, no, very, very good, but I've not seen it.
Fair play. Right then, that's just about it. Thanks very much for your time, Chris.
You're welcome. I'm just worried that I'm going to get a phone call from the Met at some point to tell me that I invaded someone's personal space last night. So
I mean, it certainly sounds like it. I wouldn't be leaving the country at any time soon, put it that way.
No.
Yeah. George, thank you very much.
You're so incredibly welcome. Big hugs all around.
Always.
Big hugs all around.
Absolutely. Firm handshakes, chaps. Yeah, well done. Okay. We got through. That's it. Get in touch. At Pod on the Tyne on Twitter or X and email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. Enjoy the rest of your week, ladies and gents. Thanks very much for listening. We'll speak to you very soon. Take care.
The Athletic.